Hi, I'm Honora Foa. Welcome to Mythic Imagination. Tonight, we'll be sharing the well-known story of Santa Claus, only tonight, it's from the point of view of Santa as the hero in the hero's journey. As our jolly old elf prepares to depart from the North Pole, he faces the timeless archetypal drama, just like everybody else. And it all starts with a call.
Santa here? Of course I'm at the North Pole. Where else would I be? Fog? Except huge fog bank. Leaping reindeer. Vixen, is this another one of your hung up on me.
What's the matter, dear?
Fog.
Fog?
You heard me.
No, you heard me. Who stays glued to the Weather Channel every Christmas Eve?
Oh, go take up ice fishing.
Ice fishing? If someone were around more often, I wouldn't have
How
to.
Many nights do I get out, Tom? One. One night a year. One!
One word, Santa. Workaholic.
Two words, Mrs. Santa. High maintenance.
It's never gonna be the same again, is it?
I didn't run off with a young haughty elf.
No, you just lay there every night moaning, Barbie, Barbie.
She's a doll.
I heard that.
Well, hear this.
You walk out now. No bother coming back.
I give and I give. What do I get? Cookies filled with partially hydrogenated fats. Milk when I'm lactose intolerant. I'll go where I've shown some kind of respect. What the... I'm going to try that again. Am I dreaming? What's going on?
Vixen broke out the knock. The non-union elves have no tolerance.
It's Christmas Eve. With the elf strike, we're way behind schedule.
Two words, Santa. E-bay.
What? Who's behind this? Vixen! Must you always live up to your name?
Hey, SC, how you doing?
You know you can't hold your nog.
Who cares?
Who cares? If you can't fly straight...
Two words. Pea soup.
But we've flown in worse.
Did you have to go through hip replacement surgery? No.
Well, that skyscraper wasn't there the year before. Besides, we've got Rudolph now.
That running with the cell tower fixed his sleigh. Two words. Bipolar. Get it? Get it?
Yeah, I'm getting it all right. Two words. Half rations. Ow! Who put that there?
You did.
What is it?
The North Pole.
Who are you?
You don't know?
Wait, aren't you that...
Gave up dentistry and went into deer psychology.
Deer psychology?
Stop! Don't walk! Stop! Don't walk! Stop! Don't walk!
Rudolph?
We're all gonna die! Stop! Don't walk! Stop! Don't walk!
Thinks he's a stoplight.
Oh, this is terrible. This is...
PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Don't walk! Don't walk! Don't walk!
What next? Oh, first star I see tonight, wish I may, wish I might, have a big-eared little guy dressed in green that can help me.
May the force be with you.
Who are you?
Helpful, I am. Yes.
Helpful. Helpful? Mrs. Claus just kicked me out. The workshop is a madhouse. There are not enough presents to fill two stockings. The reindeer are wasted on Nog. Rudolph thinks he's a stoplight. And the fog is thicker than your Aunt Hattie's fruitcake.
Go where the fog is not.
What? How on an iceberg am I supposed to know where the fog is not?
Three consonants, yes. GPS.
GPS? What's that?
Santa's not wired.
I'm getting pretty doggone wired.
GPS, Global Positioning System.
Powerful you will become.
Power this. We are getting in that sleigh, harnessing whatever reindeer are fit to fly, and giving out however many presents were finished before the elves went on strike.
That's the saddest set of reindeer I've ever seen.
Never had to use the second string before. Well, they'll be fine.
Did you file a flight plan?
Flight plan? I've never had to file a flight plan.
Hit with the time, Santa.
May the force be with you.
On Dashette, on Skippy, on Flouncer and Coquette, on Asteroid, on Cherub, on Boomer and Static. A little higher. Higher. That's better. What a view. Just look at that skyline.
I have a bad feeling about this, Santa.
What could possibly go wrong now? I flew where the fog was not. Visibility is perfect. I can see for miles and miles and miles and...
So can they!
I told you to file a flight plan.
The reindeer, are they all right?
I heard them exclaim as they flew out of sight, "Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
Oh, this is a disaster. No reindeer, no presents, no sleigh. That's it. No Christmas.
Helpful, I am. Yes.
You again. What next?
Feel the force.
That's a snowflake.
No, it's a letter.
Read it, you might.
This is ridiculous. Dear Santa, life sucks.
Sucks.
Mom works three part-time jobs,
and we live in a temporary shelter. My brother calls me Lizard, and he says there's no such thing as Santa Claus. He says it's all a marketing con game to get people to spend money they don't have with credit cards they'll never pay off. Is that really the truth? Is Christmas just a big fat lie? You don't have to bring me anything tied with a ribbon. I just want the simple truth. No packaging.
No packaging.
Sincerely, Lizard.
Temporary shelter, 57th Street. Oh, this does suck. They think I'm a phony.
One present left there is. Yes.
It's in 1,000 pieces.
Metaphor, that is.
What?
Walk the labyrinth, you will. Yes.
This is it. Temporary shelter, 57th Street.
I'll just lay my finger to the side of my nose. Is that you, Lizard?
Is that you, Santa?
Yes, it's Santa.
Really?
Yes, I have a present for you.
You do? Gee, sounds like it's in 1,000 pieces. Santa, it's a broken mirror. It is in 1,000 pieces. I can't see myself in this.
It's a mirror for revealing your true self, your authentic nature.
This is a lousy gift.
Knowing who you are is the greatest gift of all.
You're not real. You're a myth. Look in the mirror.
You're a hero. Look in 1,000 mirrors. You'll see 1,000 faces. Each one of them will be yours.
Are you for real?
What's important is that you're for real.
You sound like Yoda.
Sound like me? He does not.
Am I dreaming?
Ah, the notion of this universe, its heavens, hells, and everything within it, as a great dream dreamed by a single being in which all the dream characters are dreaming too.
Santa, was that you?
No, that was Joseph Campbell.
Joseph Campbell? I was reading a book by him. He quoted Carl Jung as saying, "The dream is a little hidden door in the innermost and most secret recesses of the soul, opening into that cosmic night, which was psyche long before there was any ego consciousness, and which will remain psyche, no matter how far our ego consciousness may extend."
That's right. Jung also said, "All ego consciousness is isolated. It separates and discriminates, knows only particulars, and sees only what can be related to the ego."
Mrs. Santa, how'd you get in here?
I get out once a year too, Bunky.
Remember, always we must. It is from these all-uniting depths that the dream arises, be it never so childish, grotesque, and immoral. So flower-like it is in its candor and veracity, that it makes us blush for the deceitfulness of our lives. Yes.
Now I know I'm dreaming. My hero, quoting Carl Jung.
Yeah, I think I'm dreaming too.
Sweet dreams, little lizard.
Santa? Is that really Yoda?
Yoda? I thought he was the Grinch.
Nah, too short for Jim Carrey.
Well, thanks, little green-skinned, big-eared short guy. Thanks for saving Christmas.
Save it, you did.
I did.
Ventured onto the hero's path, you did. Great courage it took.
Well, I didn't think of it that way. Maybe I did okay after all.
Brown nose.
At least red it is not, yes?
Ah, it's good to be back at the North Pole. Listen, Rudolph, we need to have a talk.
I can't breathe. We're all gonna die, man. Stop. Don't walk. Stop. Don't walk.
You are a reindeer. You are Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer. You are not a stoplight. Feel your inner reindeer. That's it. Breathe. Breathe. I am a reindeer.
You're a reindeer.
No, no. I'm Santa Claus.
No, no, I'm Santa Claus.
No, you say, I am a reindeer.
You just said you were Santa Claus, man.
I am Santa Claus. Say I am a reindeer.
This isn't good for an identity crisis.
I am a reindeer.
You are a Santa Claus.
Santa, your hot toddy is ready.
Did she say I was a hottie?
Hey, for the record, she didn't run off with anybody.
What?
No hot young elf.
He was 4,000 years old.
Elves don't show their age.
Listen, I was there. I saw the whole thing, which was nothing.
How can I trust anything coming from a reindeer who thinks he's a stoplight?
It's all in your head.
My head? You're dreaming.
It's all a dream.
I heard that.
Well, there you have it. When Santa gets shot down, he rises to the occasion in order to bring a mirror of authenticity into the world. Because the legends of Santa are so old and mythic, we've asked an expert on these legends to join us in the discussion. We have with us on the phone John Matthews from his home in Oxford, England. John, tell us what you've learned about the traditions of Santa as a mythic hero.
Around about this time of the year, we're very used to thinking of the jolly red-faced man in the red robe that comes down the chimney with gifts. But that figure goes back a very long way, much further than the Coca-Cola adverts, for instance. It goes right back to the very beginning of time, when the first people had the first shamans were making journeys into the other world to bring back messages, to bring back gifts from the other world, from the spirits, from the gods. And we have an image in our head. Let me try and paint you an image like this. You're in one of these wonderful old skin tents called a yurt, and there's a central pole of that yurt, and the shaman is dressed in red and carrying a sack over his or her back, and they're hung about them with bells that jingle, and they climb up the central pole because from there it's possible to see through the inner worlds themselves, to see into the heart of the universe and to come back with messages. So if you think of that image, the red-clad figure climbing up the pole, up the central tree, bringing back gifts down into the heart of the people down there below you. I mean, if that isn't an image that's very familiar to us today in a rather different way, then I don't know what is.
Joining me now is Zach Hill. Zach is in the midst of a book about Christmas, though I might argue that it is a book that uses Christmas as an excuse for him to talk about whatever happens to be exciting his eclectic interests. Because if you think about it, pretty much anything can find a link to Christmas. For instance, at Mythic Journeys this year, which is going to be in June of 2006, one of our themes is called From Sumer to Iraq. Who knew that there is an origin of Santa Claus from Sumeria?
There is. In fact, the real sort of reason, I guess, for Santa Claus might lie or exist, spring from Sumeria in some way. In ancient Mesopotamian civilizations, their creator god was a god named Marduk. And when the light, you know, the winter solstice happened, the light started to go away and things like that, it was important to bring light back, to have Marduk sort of recreate the world in a certain sense. And the way that they did that was by human sacrifice. Obviously, a very primitive civilization. And they wanted it to be a good one because they didn't want to blow it and have him not bring the world back. And so the person that they sacrificed was always the king. And this happened once a year. And it was obviously hard on kings because there wasn't a lot of stability in the political system because every year, you know, he gets knocked off. And what they found was that, you know, after a while, the king, he wanted to stick around for more than 1 year. And it was just kind of an unworkable system. And the workaround that they figured out was that they would sacrifice sort of a faux king or a king in place of the real king. And so they would take a prisoner who had been condemned to die anyway and sacrifice him, make him the king and sacrifice him in place of the actual king. But Marduk, they figured, you know, being the creator god, was not an idiot and wasn't going to fall for it if he was just, you know, sort of this figurehead king. So what they actually did was they made him the real king for a week. And this prisoner in ancient Mesopotamia, who was, you know, from whatever class or whatever sort of walker of life, was given all the powers of a king for a week before he was killed. And he ruled the kingdom and did the whole thing. And then he was killed in sort of a horrible way involving disembowelment. But he did it. And it was this sort of, you know, plebes or lower classes rising up for this one occasion. And this festival, which occurred on the winter solstice, was called Zagmuk. So you fast forward, you know, thousands of years later to the times of the Romans, and at the same time of year, during the waning of the light, you know, during the winter solstice, they're having this festival of Saturnalia, which was this sort of incredibly debauched festival of, you know, drinking and carousing and sex and the whole thing. And one of the main fixtures of Saturnalia, one of the main rituals of it, was the appointing of someone called the Lord of Misrule, who was a criminal or a commoner or someone who was incredibly poor, who through a sort of ballot process, which was very strange and involved like beans and cake, was appointed this person called the Lord of Misrule, and he got to run Saturnalia in Rome and sort of act just like a king, you know, which is this sort of remarkable, almost exact echo of the Zagmuk ritual thousands of years before in Sumeria. You had this Lord of Misrule, and you take it even further forward into like the 1630s and 40s in America. As we jump forward again, you see these groups of people called the Antics, who were roving street gangs, essentially, who would go into the houses of the rich and wealthy and powerful and political figures and things like that, and they would beat you if you didn't let them in. Once they got in, if they weren't really drunk and decided to beat you, they would perform a play. And then if you didn't give them money for the play, they would beat you. And obviously it didn't go over real well with you know, the powerful and influential of the communities. But in a lot of ways, it's looked on now as sort of a method of social control, all of these, you know, that in order to allow or by allowing the lower classes and the oppressed and the downtrodden to rise up and be the king or be these antics and extort the money, they get to do it once a year and it's enough. They get it out and the social order stays in place because there is this thing to look forward to or this thing to do. But by the turn of the 18th century or so, and a little bit later, there started to be a breakdown of this system where the people in power decided, you know, we're civilized peoples, we've had enough of this, and it just became too much. You know, they were sick of people basically breaking into their houses and beating them, which, yeah, okay, you can't blame them. And they needed a reason to stop it, which is where Santa Claus almost arose from, because what you have is people like Clement Clark Moore, who is the author of the most famous poem who sort of gave birth to the modern day Santa Claus, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." It's, you know, the poem that everybody hears. It was written as a sort of attempted reinvention of the holiday as a time of caring and giving and charity and decorum and little children, and of course the perfect icon for him to sort of push this on the people or reinvent this PR campaign that he's launching was Saint Nicholas, who was already an immensely popular religious figure, who was the patron saint of children and of sailors and of brewers and Russia and Greece and the undeserving losers of lawsuits and many other things, the 15 or 16 things, who already had his celebration around this type of year. And they sort of seized on this, said, yes, this is perfect. We'll use Saint Nick as our spokesperson for this new holiday of you poor people stop acting all poor all the time and breaking into our houses. And in that way, it kind of took its first step towards the very strange amalgamation that it is now.
So as that started to happen, it was like a public relations campaign to transform that. And I guess because all of these needs are human needs, and they come into archetypal images, and at that point they do take on a life of their own. And yet there are people who manipulate it who work with it. Certainly the churches and religions have always done that. Once we had The Night Before Christmas, how did that icon develop further?
Well, it's actually interesting to describe it as an icon, because one of the things is in this whole history of the Lord of Misrule and all this stuff that we're talking about, we don't have an image of Santa Claus, like literal, you know, picture. Even now, if we think about Santa Claus and the icons of Christmas, we don't know much about their personalities, what they act like besides so cheerful or giving or whatever. You know, it's very simple sort of one-word descriptors, but we have a really clear image of what it looks like. There's pictures everywhere, and that was one of the most important things when Clement Clark Moore is trying to create this new Christmas, you know, that is melding together the pagan and religious elements and moving towards a more calm, charitable, decorous festival.
So let me interrupt you just a second. You're also saying that is combining with the deeper religious imagery that really does connect to Christ as the light being born, and as the heart, and as giving and generosity coming out of the true meaning of the depths of Christianity, and the need for that to meld with this other social need that the St. Nicholas stream is, that you're coming from, that you're talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's an interesting time in history, because before that you can sort of see the Christmas celebration running along two parallel tracks. Since the time of the Romans, Christmas has technically been the celebration of the birth of Christ, but it has been, in the minds of these Christians, sort of perverted and changed into this other sort of pagan ritual and festival and all this drinking and carousing and all these other things. And they're on the same track. And what was happening is the celebration was of the drunkenness and the partying and the wildness and things like that. And the celebration of Christ's birth wasn't really observed. It was simply accepted, this is when Christ was born, you know, it's okay, that's what it is. But this celebration was a separate thing. And what Moore and those at that time started to happen is the two paths kind of crossed. He brought the religious aspect and the idea of celebrating Christ's birth on this day more to the forefront in order to cause it to sort of be more calm, more religious, more focused on things besides getting, you know, smashed and screwing.
Great. So tell us about Santa Claus himself and the evolution of the image.
Well, if you go all the way back to German mythology and, you know, German goddesses in the Middle Ages, there was one in particular that sort of stands out when you look at the descriptions, which was Berchta. It was a German goddess who came in midwinter, and she flew around to all these houses. She was this spirit, and she would fly down your chimney and inspect your house to make sure it was clean enough. And if it wasn't, she would set you on fire. But if it was, she would offer you protection or, you know, good wishes, gifts for the coming year. And one of the remarkable things about Berchta is she was always followed by these flying animal spirits, which were mostly goats. Not sure why. But a lot of different flying animal spirits. And when she was done with the inspection, assuming that you weren't on fire, she would stand under the chimney and turn into a puff of smoke and disappear back up the chimney, you know, which obviously right there sort of, you know, reminds you so much of the poem and placing the finger aside of the nose and all those sort of things. So it's a real clear connection right to it, but it doesn't make for a particularly attractive image, given that the descriptions of her include like an iron nose and a gigantic misshapen foot, and it wasn't the look they were going for, clearly. So what happened was they took some of these, you know, somehow some of these characteristics of Berchta, the flying animals and the rising up the chimney and, you know, the have you been bad or good kind of feeling that came into this were combined with this other religious festival that was already occurring at the same time of Saint Nick. And, you know, nobody really knows what Saint Nick looked like. He was, you know, obviously this incredibly popular figure with all these different, very disparate kind of depictions of him. And what they did was they kind of combined them. They started Thomas Nast, a famous illustrator for Harper's Magazine, took a lot of different stabs, and you can see his image of it sort of evolving over time into from an elf who's very small with a little beard and getting a little bit larger, and sometimes he's black and sometimes he's white, and you know, he's different sizes. And when it really started to When Clement Clark Moore and the Knickerbockers and in New York and other places who were this political elite started to really need an image, they started to develop this image of, you know, the bearded elf, but it really didn't solidify until it entered corporate America, and what happened was all these different images were fine, but you needed one iconic sort of theme and group of images to sell your product. In this case, the product was Coca-Cola, which didn't sell well in the winter because it was an iced drink, and they needed, you know, a Christmas figure to link it with. Santa Claus was an obvious choice by then. This was in the 30s, and they hired a man named Sundblom to do these illustrations, and he picked as his model his neighbor, Lou Prentice, who was a used car salesman from Kansas, and he was a big, jolly, fat, you know, sort of red-cheeked guy who all the kids loved. And this Sundblom artist drew him over and over and over again on every piece of Coca-Cola merchandise and every, you know, broadside and every magazine in America. And it's exactly what we see today in Santa Claus. He created the modern Santa Claus. Obviously, he wears red and white because those are Coke's colors. But every time you look at Santa Claus today, you are looking at a model of or a depiction of Lou Prentice, the used car salesman. That's who it is. That's just what he looked like. And he became the iconic Santa Claus that evolved into what we have today.
All right. So here's the salient points, folks. Coca-Cola giving us our icon, along with who knew that house cleaning was such a life and death issue. So also with us tonight is Andrew Greenberg. Andrew will be sharing his insights into stories of Santa.
I had a physicist friend of mine in college talk about how Santa Claus was most like a beam of light and must move at the speed of light to make his trip. And along the way, he acts as both a particle and a wave. He's the wave that floods through our hearts and into our homes, delivering happiness and goodies. He's also a particle who can take hugs, eat the cookies, and have people sit on his laps. I think that the one story which best sums up Santa Claus is still the Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus letter from Frank Church long ago in his response in the Baltimore Sun. There's nothing, I think, that better sums up the role of Santa Claus as a myth of a great truth cloaked in metaphor as these lines from Frank Church. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exists, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. The most real things in this world are those that neither children nor men can see.
The sound designer for Mythic Imagination is Brad Barnett. Special thanks to Creative Digital Group for the generous use of their studio. Find them on the web at creativedigitalgroup.com. Mythic Imagination's musical introduction was by Jeffrey Armus. He can be found on the web at jeffreyarmus.com. That's Jeffrey, GeoffreyArmes. Santa in Santa Claus's Mythic Journey was played by Bill Sutton. Mrs. Santa was played by his wife, Brenda Sutton. Find them on the web at www.bsutton.com. The Nerdy Elf and Rudolph were played by Brad Barnett. Yoda was played by Dan Toler. Lizard was played by Chris Miner. Vixen was played by Andrew Greenberg. And Donna Barnett wrote Santa Claus's Mythic Journey and the lyrics to Reindeer Rap. Our deepest thanks to John Matthews for sharing his research into the legends of Santa Claus. John lives in Oxford, England, and is the author of many books, including The Winter Solstice, The Sacred Traditions of Christmas. We'll be hearing more from John and his wife, Catelyn, in our next podcast of Mythic Imagination. They will also be joining us for our next Mythic Journeys conference in June. And thanks to Andrew Greenberg and Zach Hill for their insights. We'd also love to hear yours. Please email your thoughts, comments, ideas about Mythic Imagination to info@mythicimagination.org. Mythic Imagination is a production of the Mythic Imagination Institute. Our producer is Donna Barnett. And now, to get you in the spirit of your mythic journey, here's our own Rudolph singing Reindeer Rap, another mythic take on the hero's journey. Vocals by Brad Barnett, and Rudolph's backup singer is Brooke Haynes. So, thanks for listening. And remember, every life is a story, and a story can change the world.
Once upon a time, down in the hood, reindeer poking fun wasn't feeling real good. The night was black as soot, treated me like a dog. Couldn't see a thing, then enrolled the fog. I knew I could do it if they gave me a chance. I knew I could do it if they let me just prance. Moon ain't that high, just give me a try. I'm a reindeer dude, I was born to fly. What's a deer to do? I was basically clueless. Such a fine mess, it was basically hopeless. They were drinking nog, fellowship and cheer. I was in a loop hearing reindeer jeers. You look kinda funny, in fact you look strange. Forget about playing in the reindeer games. You're a circus freak, you look really dumb. You'll never fly, and you ain't no fun. Standing all alone in the dark, dark cold. Stubby, short, and scrawny, or so I've been told. Felt like a loser, felt I'd been hosed. And what's with this thing about the big red nose? Tried to exit out, knocked down the glow. Used boot polish, I even tried snow. Tried a knit hat, my nose up a sleeve. All the stuff I tried just gave me a nosebleed.
Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah. Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah. Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah. Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah.
Went back to the brothers, they wouldn't let me stay. Said I made them hyper with my freakish ray. That really did it. It had to be the end. Then Santa came around with a big wide grin. Rudolph, old chap, where have you been? Can I call you Rudy since we're such good friends? Tonight I'm in a jam, if you could, if you would. We need a new solution to deliver the goods. The sky is pitch black, visibility low. We need a set of headlights to give it a go. He looked me in the eye and he gave me a nod. The way the thing shines, you're the deer for the job. The antlers start quivering like it was a joke. Vixen fell down as if hit by a bolt. But then the brothers loved me, they shouted out with glee. Rudy, old man, you'll go down in history.
Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah. Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah. Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah. Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah.
Santa grabbed the gear, then he started to shout. Dancer, heads up, blitz and get the let out. Time to cruise the cities, span the urban sprawl. Dash away, dash away, dash away all. The moral of the story? Grow where you're planted. Take in the terrain, take root where you've landed. Be who you are, then get out and kick. Leading the pack with old Saint Nick.
Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah. Rudolph, Rudolph, yeah, yeah. Rudolph, Rudolph.
Merry Crizzle, my nizzle.